All right, so we're in Parallel World again, and we are with the head honcho. Who are you?
I'm Lynn Hill. I'm the general manager for Parallel Computing Platform team. Mm-hmm. Came over to start this team, so came over from Windows to start this team about 2 years ago.
Okay.
With the mission of go figure out what Microsoft needs to do to leverage the, or really effectively partner with the hardware vendors, and how is the hardware going to change, and make sure that our software is really taking advantage of all the advances in hardware. So that was a pretty big charter of trying to figure out, okay, what should Microsoft be doing?
Yeah.
And, you know, we've kind of tackled it from looking all up and down the stack, so saying all the way from the systems level software, the interfaces between hardware and software, the runtimes, the languages and tools, and said, pretty big space, what do we have to do? Mm-hmm. So our initial activities are really kind of from the center out.
Okay.
We looked at the runtime and said the most important thing we have to do is really have a concurrency runtime that is going to allow us to be able to effectively manage all of these resources that mm-hmm. are going to be available, and then kind of push down into the OS and say, well, what do we need from the OS level? What do we need from the hardware? And then push up into the languages. Mm-hmm. And so our approach really has been, let's start to take a slice across the stack, both up and down, and start to solve this problem. So in doing that, my team basically has three major charters. One is driving this parallel computing initiative mm-hmm. across Microsoft, working with strategic partners and making sure that we're looking holistically across the industry and really saying, how are we going to help make this shift across this chasm from where computing is today to where we want it to go tomorrow, and then to build some of the core technologies.
Mm-hmm.
But the technologies that we build in my organization will really seed the efforts that the larger company has to build. So we're really trying to help by seeding it and then pushing out technologies to other groups across Microsoft.
Excellent. So you're getting real-time feedback from other teams. Are other teams dog-fooding what you're releasing?
I would say initially other teams are really virtual members of my team. So we work really closely with the Windows organization, with many of the groups in the developer division, as well as with application teams. So, you know, one of the things I didn't mention was that we're really looking at applications of the future as well. And what does it mean to have 100 times more compute power on your desktop? What are we going to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a lot of research that has happened over the last 10, 15, 20 years that is just really ready to pop out and come together. So when you look at visual computing and speech and natural gestures, and you start to bring that all together, well, that requires a lot of computing power because it's the integration, being able to take all of that sensory input, real-time, evaluate it, and change the terms of computing so that the user isn't driven by what the computer wants, but rather the computer is driven by what the user wants, so what I'd like to call intent-driven applications.
Okay.
So another part of our partnering is really looking at the applications team, partnering closely with a lot of work coming out of Microsoft Research and looking and saying, how are we going to utilize this technology? What are the requirements? What do we have to put into the platform? So I would say, you know, we're not necessarily right now at the dog fooding stage as much as we're at the stage of trying to
experiment.
Yeah, and bring in the larger community at Microsoft and really expand. You know, I have a fairly small team in terms of Microsoft groups, and so it's really about, you know, bringing in the larger community. But having said that, we are working with some teams to really look at the early CTPs that we put out, the early technology, and saying, start utilizing what we have, start giving us feedback, as well as we have Microsoft Tab customers now that will be picking up some of our early technology. So we are seeking out feedback, and we are entering into that phase where we really want people to start dog-fooding our efforts.
Sure. So it's interesting because you have a pretty immense problem because, for example, Windows, Win32, Windows, that wasn't designed for 80 cores programming, developers programming against 80 cores through Windows. So there has to be changes down at that level. So one of the things I was thinking about after doing so many of these interviews, you're given a specific tool set and you have to tack on ways to make parallel programming possible in what developers are trained with today. Because we can't expect developers to just throw everything out and start becoming functional programmers, for example. So how is that, like, how does that work? I mean, it's a pretty immense challenge that you have.
So we've actually broken the problem into, I'd say, two categories. One is, you know, as you mentioned, we're not going to just throw away everything we have, right? So how do we inject parallelism into existing programs, into existing models? And then the other one is, how, you know, are we going to write these programs of the future? You know, and we will look at introducing new languages and new constructs that, because part of our goal really is to abstract away the concepts of parallelism from developers. We want people to really be able to focus on what are these capabilities. So, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, the visual computing and the natural gestures and so think about what is it they want to bring to their customers, what capabilities, and not have to think about how is the underlying architecture impacting and how do they program to that. So as we do that, we will have to, you know, invent some new languages and some new ways of programming. But we certainly want to make sure that we're also addressing all of the existing models that developers know. So that is a really hard kind of two-headed problem that we have to look at. Most of our early technologies that we are building are focused on the concepts around injecting parallelism because we want to be able to introduce into the models that developers know. We also want to start to get that early feedback on what's working, what's not working. And there are some problems right now that are out there, you know, particularly in some of the markets like financial markets, the computer-aided design applications that are already at their limit and need to leverage the power that's out there on the multi-core hardware. So we're looking at, you know, across the board different ways to tackle this, what's a very large and complex problem.
Indeed. So, I mean, where do the, I mean, the hardware people are the ones that created this problem. I mean, where do they fit into your sort of design process, right? I mean, the Intel people, for example, or any, you know, I use their name just out of one of many manufacturers of these chips. How do they work with you? I mean, do you share ideas with them? Do they give you any technical advice or, like, you know, can we talk about that?
Yeah, sure. First, I'd like to say they didn't really create the problem. Physics created the problem because, you know, Intel would have loved to, and the other hardware vendors as well, you know, AMD, going along with the models that we had. But we reached limitations, you know, being able to dissipate, you know, and utilize power without melting down your desk. So I think the industry as a whole has a problem that we need to, if we want to continue to evolve computing, and we don't want to just say, wow, we've reached this wall. We have to work together.
Mm-hmm.
So my team partners really closely with the hardware vendors. We look at what are the new architectures coming out. We get early samples of the hardware. We are in constant conversations around what will we need from the hardware, how can we program the hardware that's coming out more effectively. So it really is a tight partnership. In fact, at Intel's developer forum that they just held in August,
mm-hmm.
We presented there, and they will also participate with us at PDC, as well as we're partnering with AMD and, you know, even the GPU vendors as well, like NVIDIA. So really looking at how do we help influence where the hardware is going, and how do they provide us with information that's going to influence where the software is going.
Interesting. So as these chips get more and more powerful, I mean, is it possible that you could have virtual machines running on chips that handle sort of passing off concurrency and work to different cores? I mean, is there thinking, like, in the future about putting more logic on a chip than exists today?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things we like to say is that it's about putting a system on a chip. So where today, you know, you think about the processor, and then you have, you know, what if that the same size that you have for the processor really is an entire computer?
Mm.
And what does that mean? You know, what kinds of special accelerators are going to be on the machine? We're already seeing kind of GPUs becoming much more you know, mainstream in the terms of that workloads other than not just graphics are being offloaded to the GPUs. CPUs are bringing on more graphics capability. Are we going to see some kind of convergence around some of the capabilities that you have in some of the specialized hardware more onto, you know, one chip? You know, one of the things we really look at, and it is one of the challenges going forward, is if you have a heterogeneous chip. So it's not just do you have many cores, but are those cores doing different functions? So not only do you want to distribute workloads across these different processors, but are you going to have different types of workloads and different types of work that is now going to have to be distributed to different processors or different types of accelerators that are on the chip? And we definitely don't want developers to have to think about that, right? It becomes much too complex to not only have to think about how many cores you have, but do you have specialized cores? So what we'd like to get to is a model where a developer can really describe what kinds of capabilities they need for their application. And then there's the runtime can really figure out what kind of hardware is available, and then how do you map that appropriately to the available resources that are on the hardware, and then also what are the available resources based on what else is running on the machine.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, because you have people on your team that have been in the supercomputing industry for 20 years, 30 years,
yeah.
And they've always been kind of working on that problem. So the question would be, what makes you think we're any closer to solving the problems that these supercomputing types have been unable to solve? I realize that the problem is now in the face of general purpose programmers in the world. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, that's a great question because, you know, everybody says, if we've been trying to do this for 40 years, why are we all of a sudden going to be able to do it? You know, I think that there are some things that have changed in terms of the overall computer architecture, but partially it is that we're moving into an area where parallelism is going to become a requirement in order to leverage the hardware that's coming, you know, available. So some of the problems that you had really looked at by a smaller set of people now are going to be looked at by a much larger group of people, and so given that, I think we're going to have to force ourselves to solve some of these problems. It doesn't make them simpler, and there are still a lot of issues around how do we make parallelism safe, how do we make it effective, and those challenges do exist. And that's where I think we will look at, you know, are there new languages and things that we have to build? Are there ways of building domain-specific libraries that encapsulate capabilities that you will have some programmers that have to really think around the complexities of parallelism, but they can abstract that away from the more mainstream set of developers that really want to, again, focus on what are the business problems, what are the problems that they want to solve, what are the capabilities they want to bring to their customers.
Sure.
So I think you're going to see, you know, different areas of specialties emerge. And one of the areas that we really haven't invested a lot in the past is this concept of having domain-specific libraries. But as we look at the capabilities that are going to come forth in a lot of these areas, I think that's going to be something we need to look more closely at. And in fact, we have some areas of investigation going on now.
Interesting. So these are actually domain-specific languages that target concurrency?
There's domain-specific languages and then libraries and capabilities. So, you know, when you think in the space of image processing or, you know, physics is something that in virtual worlds is really important. You see that in games now, but if you're really going to bring forth a lot of the concepts that you have in games, so this idea of having 3D modeling, and then apply photorealism on that, real-time, you know, interaction, there's a lot of physics that underlie that. So you won't want to have everybody understand how to program physics, but what we're going to see is a bunch of capabilities and libraries that the people that really want to understand how to program physics
sure.
will focus on and be able to bring that forth to a wide range of developers. Same thing in vision and image processing, natural gestures. So, for example, you know, we're making investments in a lot of the multi-touch weaving. You know, Microsoft as a company is investing that, but you're going to see a lot more investments in speech and in vision and bringing those together into, you know, what will be very interesting interactive applications.
Absolutely. And So for the line of business type developer, and many of them out there, in fact, those are most of the managed developers, what are we doing in terms of analysis tools to help them pinpoint in their code, or code that they didn't write, but they're tacking on their functionality on top of a big managed code base, for example, tools that can help them pinpoint, hey, parallelism, this might be a good place to throw this little, declarative statement here that says, try to run this in parallel or whatever.
Yeah.
Are you working on that?
It would be great if we could come up with tools that would run through everybody's existing code and say, hey, parallelize this for me. And in fact, that is something like in, the HPC space and that I think has been kind of a dream for a long time. We will provide some tools for targeted areas, but having a tool that's just going to run through everybody's code and say, here, I can, automatically parallelize this for you, is not an area that we're investing in right now. What we're really focused on is any of the programming models that we come out with is making sure that we have corresponding tools that go along with those models. So as we change the way that a programmer is going to implement things. So, for example, if you're thinking in terms of tasks as opposed to threads, we don't want to have you debug by looking at individual threads, right? Because you can't match then what were the concepts that you used to program with how you're debugging. And so what we're really focused on is making sure that, any of the new concepts that we introduce, any of the new programming models we introduce, that we have corresponding tools that go along with those concepts and allow the developer to stay in that mode of thinking. But having said that, we will look at some tools that, we'll try to analyze code and certainly from a performance standpoint, allow developers to look at their code so that we won't necessarily say, hey, this is how you could transform this piece of code into it being parallel, but they will be able to profile their code and look at where are they having bottlenecks, where are they having performance issues. From that perspective, they'll be able to say, wow, here's an opportunity for me to go and look at, could I parallelize this code? Why is it having performance issues? Where are the blocking modes?
Absolutely. And I think about our code base at Microsoft, which is mainly native. And of course, there's amazing developers here that do great multi-threaded code. I make fun of Office sometimes because it blocks when it checks for email. But that's just kidding aside. They have brilliant developers over there that are doing great work. But you're going to have so much legacy code, which sort of makes sense why you're going the library approach for C++, for example.
Yeah.
It'll make people easier, as you say, to inject stuff. But at the language level, there's also potentially could be some changes as well in the existing languages.
Yes.
And that's interesting. We'll be talking about that at the PDC, actually, the evolution of languages panel. Anyway, what I'm trying to get out as far as a question is you have all this legacy code. How are customers responding to, having to modify their code? People don't like to crack open big C++ projects to try to help make it more concurrent. So how does that work? How is your relationship? What's the reaction you're getting from people?
Well, interestingly, the reaction has been we've gotten a lot of interest from customers who are saying, wow, I've got this hardware out there. I really want to know how that I can make, take advantage of it. And like I mentioned before, we have customers, in some of the markets where they've already been hitting the wall. Mm-hmm. So the financial markets are, they're more than happy to say, wow, we've got these problems that we want to apply what you're putting out. So in the parallel extensions, both in native and in managed, we want to be able to, we have problems that we can utilize those technologies for right away. So yes, while some customers would love to say, hey, just take my, entire code base and run it through some magical tool and have it run faster on the new hardware, I think most customers realize that this is, going to evolve over time and that some of the problems they have right now that are just screaming for parallelism, they're going to tackle those first. And we have tried to simplify the kinds of models that we're putting into the existing languages so that writing that new code, injecting parallelism, is pretty straightforward. And so far we're getting really positive feedback. Where we were kind of looking at where a customer's going to get interested, You know, I had someone tell me, oh, this is still a niche market. And I'm like, it's not a niche market. We have, you know, all of our, you know, mainstream customers asking about it. And I'll be really excited at PDC to be talking to, you know, developers and getting, you know, their feedback for what we're going to be showing at PDC. And we have quite a few sessions and a symposium, so that will be good as well.
Excellent. And at the symposium, is there going to be the hardware people on
yes,
the panel,
yeah.
on that group as well?
Yeah, we'll have some of the hardware partners represented at the symposium. So like I mentioned before, mm-hmm. this is really an industry shift. It's
sure.
something that we need to work together to really help all of our customers move across what I consider a pretty big chasm to jump over and change the industry. You know, I look at the shift in the hardware is pretty equivalent to when PCs came out. So really making that same kind of change from mainframes to PCs. We can also look at some of the other big things like the internet, you know, what did it take? Mobile devices. So this is a pretty big introduction. And I think what you're not only going to see that it's going to take time for people to for us to come out with a different, you know, software and for people to make the shift. But you're also going to see the introduction of experiences and opportunities that we can only kind of imagine now. We don't, you know, if you thought, you know, 10 years ago, would everybody be walking around with their mobile device connected and what would that look like? You know, we wouldn't have necessarily predicted everything that had happened today. And so I see that with the introduction of many-core hardware that we're going to see capabilities that are going to come forward in the next 5 to 10 years that are just going to change the way we interact with computers. So I'm pretty excited about that. I really look at this as not so much, a difficulty in how do we change software, but in more as an opportunity of how do we really start to see some of these things that have been in science fiction movies come forward in terms of applications.
Excellent. Well, one question I would have is the what-if analyses. What is that? I've heard that. Can you elaborate on that?
You mean what if in terms of when programs do what-if analysis?
Yeah.
So, you know, what if modeling is today, you know, if you ask a computer to do a specific task, you really have to tell it, you know, okay, and often we have a really hard time translating what we want. I mean, think about even when you're searching, trying to ask for specifically what you want. You know, the what if capability, if a computer could go out and think about all the what ifs you might ask of it, and because you have all this extra compute power, it can be processing that while you're thinking about other things. Mm. When you actually get to the point of asking what if, the information is there. So if you think about modeling, so for example, I'm remodeling my house, you know, and I want to ask the question, well, what if I put this window in this position? How will the sunlight look in the fall, in the spring, in the summer? You know, how might it affect the noise volume in the house? You know, how might it affect the heat in the house? And so there's all kinds of questions I can ask. So if I can do modeling on the computer, and I have the capability as the user to manipulate that model in real time, I can ask all kinds of questions and let the computer really think about these what-if scenarios. And so you can apply them to, you know, all kinds of common things we do today, you know, real estate, remodeling, shopping.
The economy.
Yep, the economy, although I'm not sure anybody could predict the economy. But it is one of the interesting problems, I think, to solve is having computers really try to think more on human terms. And that's what I call intent-driven, mm-hmm. you know, applications, is what is the user's intent? And our intent is often, it's not so straightforward to say, because every human doesn't have the same intent. We don't ask for things in the same way. We don't react to things in the same way. So how do you take information about a particular user, model that in a way that the machine can actually learn from what that user has been doing, what activity they're currently doing, what connections they have, and really craft that so that the application is much more focused on what that user's intent is, what they want to do.
Absolutely. And that can all be made easier with multiple threads and concurrency in general.
Yeah, I mean, if you have 128 processors and the computer can go out and, again, be predicting what you may ask it, what you might want to think, if that data gets thrown away because you never do ask that question, it won't really matter. But today, if you were going off and doing a bunch of extraneous computing, that you'd be blocked, right? And the user then would be irritated and annoyed because the computer's taking over as opposed to, you know, predicting what that user might think.
Absolutely. And several years ago now, well, not several, but maybe 3 years ago, we did this first Singularity interview on Channel 9. I was kidding around with Jim Laris about a homeostatic operating system, something that could recover automatically from any number of things that go wrong. So you could actually have, every application could sort of have, like you're saying, like a system that watches it, monitors it simultaneously without affecting the performance of the application, and fix things without the user even knowing. So a much more human-like or physiological system is going to be enabled here for computing. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I hope you pull it off.
Yeah.
So about you, I mean, you said you came from the Windows team. What were you doing? How long have you been at Microsoft? What were you doing in Windows?
I was at Microsoft. I've been here going on 12 years. Prior to coming over to take on this job, I was the general manager of Windows Security Access Control.
Wow.
So I kind of had all the core logon, crypto, certificate services. I also had the rights management services product unit. Prior to that, I started up the rights management product unit, shipped that product. And previous to my time in Windows, I worked in our online space in content management tools, advertising technology, and some voice technology. And prior to coming to Microsoft, I spent close to 10 years at Bellcore in the Bell system, designing large-scale provisioning and networking systems.
Excellent. And were you a computer science major in college, or math, or?
I actually kind of took a long route through my bachelor's degree, changing majors a few times, but ended up with a physics degree. And at the time, physics, you know, the Bell system, we actually had a lot of physics majors. In fact, there's quite a few physics majors here at Microsoft. And I got my master's in computer science when I worked for Bellcore.
Excellent. Very cool. Well, we'll keep, you know, we're going to keep checking in. You know, we've talked to Joe a lot and Stephen too.
Yeah.
And have has been very helpful in setting up interviews, and we've communicated across the spectrum. So we're going to continue following what you guys are doing.
Okay.
And you're going to be at the PDC?
I will be at PDC.
Excellent.
And kicking off the symposium and, you know, like I said, watching and seeing what's going on in terms of how developers are responding to some of the things that we will be introducing and talking about. So I'm pretty excited. We have a pre-conference, and we have four sessions that will go over the different things we're doing in terms of our concurrency runtime, our investments in native and managed languages and parallel tools. And then we have a full-day symposium, which talks about all different kinds of aspects of the mini-core shift, in which we will also have our hardware partners involved in that symposium.
Excellent. Well, you should check out the Language Evolution panel on Wednesday if you're down there.
Okay, I will definitely do that.
That's going to be cool.
Okay.
We're going to have some language types talking about concurrency and how it's impacting their languages.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for your time.
Okay,
great
thank
to
you.
Meet you.
Okay.